What we're doing at the Army Research Lab is creating an improved surrogate material to represent the human skull. And that material is being designed to mimic the mechanical response of the skull during high rates of loading. And those are the kind of loading events you might see in the battlefield, say during a severe impact event or a blast event. What 3D printing allows us to do, or otherwise known as additive manufacturing, is to make these materials in a layer-by-layer process. And that's a similar architecture to what we find in the human skull. The skull bone, and in general the human bone, has a continuous outer layer, and that gradually transitions into a porous region in the middle. And so 3D printing allows us to recreate that structure and the gradient in that porosity between the layers, and include features like curvature and the change in the layer thickness at various regions around the skull. And all of those attributes contribute to the overall mechanical response.
Where are we in the research process right now, Doctor? Are we toward finding solutions, or are we still in the very early exploratory stages of understanding how all of this works?
Well, we definitely don't have a clear picture right now of how the brain is getting injured in these dynamic events. And so what we're doing in creating this surrogate is developing a better tool that can be used in our experiments and reducing the amount of variability and uncertainty in experiments so that we can better understand how the soldier is getting loaded and experiencing accelerations during these events. So currently, we're looking at the surrogate material and the 3D printed architecture on a small scale, on a coupon scale. This is a subset of the human skull, and comparing the response on the coupon scale to that of the real cranial bone. We can take medical imaging, such as a CT scan, from an actual bone specimen and convert that into a three-dimensional computer model and send that file directly to the printer to make essentially a near-identical copy of the specimen, but made out of a synthetic material that behaves like the bone. And so right now where we are in the research is we're showing that the material has a good correlation in terms of fracture properties and flexural properties. We're now evaluating the degree of resolution we can achieve using the 3D printing process to reproduce the architecture, and we're trying to understand how much detail of that bone architecture we need to capture in order to get the overall response we're looking for.
You use the term bone behavior, and I wonder if that's the reason why things like commercial synthetic bones or skulls from cadavers may not be suitable for the type of research and application that people will want to use the ones you're creating for.
Well, yeah, you mentioned using cadaveric skulls, and there are some concerns with testing with real human skulls. And foremost, using human tissue like that can introduce a lot of variability into our experiments. And the donors of those skulls typically come from an older population, and the mechanical response of those skulls can vary widely depending upon the health and the age of the donor. And it may not necessarily represent the properties of the skull of a soldier who, you know, are younger and in their 20s and 30s. And that kind of variability can make it difficult to evaluate different protection measures in a statistically meaningful way. On top of that, there are strict procedures for working with human tissue and handling and preserving that tissue. And the availability of those tissues can sometimes be uncertain when it actually comes time to perform the testing. So all in all, if we can develop a simulant that has a more narrowly defined range of properties and tailored to that of the soldier population, we can better perform our experiments that way.
Is creating something like a synthetic cranial bone through a 3D printer as simple as creating other items that people are creating on 3D printers, where you pretty much you have the 3D image and the printer just kind of pops it out? Or is there more of an experimental or testing process that you're going through to create these?
Well, we are working with unique materials that have mechanical properties that you wouldn't typically find in most items that you might print with a 3D printer. The bone is a fairly stiff material, and And in order to get that stiffness and the same fracture response out of a material that can also be printed can be challenging. These materials can be difficult to work with and can also pose challenges in how fine of a detail, how small of a pore size we can actually capture, and while still retaining the mechanical properties that we're looking for.
And those sound to me, based on what you were describing earlier, as extremely critical to being able to determine whether you'll be able to rely on the data that you collect from whatever testing you might choose to do.
That's correct. Currently, we would use head forms that have sensors inside to measure forces and accelerations. But if we want to capture a more biophilic response, that's more human-like response, and understand how much the skull is flexing in these dynamic events, when fracture may occur, how stress waves may propagate from the outside of the head to the inside of the head, then we feel capturing this architecture and really better representing the material of the bone of the skull will enable us to do that.
Is this something that you see being able to do on the horizon? I mean, do you have a sense that you're moving toward, in the not-too-distant future, being able to produce a kind of skull that you'll actually be able to perform these tests on that will have the properties that you're looking for, Doctor?
Well, we're currently, as I mentioned, working on this smaller scale and in a very controlled laboratory environment to prove the correlation between small specimens of cranial bone versus the synthetic specimen of cranial bones. And once we have that correlation and confidence in the material and the architecture, then we're going to move towards making the actual full skull architecture. And at that point, the testing and evaluation would move into a larger experimental setup, similar to what's being used currently with what are like crash dummy head forms, in a sense, and understanding how well these surrogate materials reproduce what would happen in a true battlefield scenario.
Will you conduct the next stage of the research once you get the skulls to the point where you want them to be able to test them? Will you conduct the next step of research at the Army Research Lab, or will you then partner with other organizations, either in or outside the military, for them to use these to conduct whatever research they want to do?
We do have researchers at the Army Research Lab who are working towards understanding how forces and accelerations are imparted to the soldier during blast and impact events. And they will be the next evaluator, if you will, of such a technology. But with further acceptance of this, then this type of material, this type of surrogate, can be used in a wider arena to evaluate survivability. And we are partnering with medical experts and within the Army Medical Research and Materiel Command. And they're really focused on determining what it is that's happening to the brain in these events. And so we would hope that these tools, improved surrogate materials, can be used in their evaluations to better understand how the brain is getting injured.
What has been the most difficult part so far, that maybe a challenge that you've had to overcome in getting this right, in getting this to where you'd like it to be, Doctor?
Well, reproducing the mechanical response at low loading rates, meaning like if you just pull on it or push on it, meaning the bone, at slow rates may not be as challenging. But when we start increasing the loading rate, meaning a dynamic event where fracture properties will change, and they may be a drastic change from what they were at a slower loading rate, that's where one of the major challenges lies, is reproducing the dynamic conditions and reproducing the dynamic response in these materials.
And what is it possible to give me an example of the type of an event that might be a mild loading event as opposed to a more severe one?
Well, one scenario of a mild loading event may be a soldier falling and striking his head either on a non-moving object or a moving object, and perhaps a more severe impact event would be taking a ballistic impact to a helmet, and the type of deflection that the helmet goes through, which then transfers loads and accelerations to the head.
It's fascinating research that you're doing, Doctor. Anything else that you would like to tell us about it?
Well, I would just like to emphasize that we are in the initial stages in developing these surrogates, and we still don't have a clear picture as to how the brain really is getting injured in blast events or severe impact events, but developing the surrogate is one step towards that. And the Department of Defense and the wider medical community and academic institutions are all working very hard towards this problem. And as we better understand it, we will develop the protection measures to ensure that our soldiers can do their jobs effectively and return home safely.